Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Apologies for the on-time performance. We're about 3 minutes slow on starting this morning's press conference. Welcome to Wizz Air's full-year results presentation for the 12 months, 31st March 2017. We'll kick off with Chief Executive of Wizz Air, Joseph Faraday.
Good morning. There must be a relation between the shape of the business and attendance of this meeting. Last time around, there were many more people and we didn't report too good numbers, and it looks like we are reporting better numbers, and the audience in size went down as a result. But seriously, well, here we are today to report our financial year 2017. In the year, we delivered 19% growth on passenger traffic to 23.8 million passengers. Our network has been expanding to 42 countries. We were adding four new countries like Kazakhstan, Albania, Kosovo, and Morocco. We kept managing our costs quite rigorously. Ex-fuel costs came down slightly. Obviously, overall cost came down as a result of the lower input costs on fuel. Ancillary revenue remained in focus of the business. We upped ancillary revenue production to 27.5 euros per passenger. You may remember that we were making comments on accelerating growth towards the end of the financial year. Indeed, we did that, and you will see a slide why actually we were doing it. Significant capacity inflation was the characteristics of the market in Central and Eastern Europe, dragging the yield environment, and we decided to actually up our growth plan to consolidate our market leadership in the region. We are reporting 246 million euros of statutory profit, which is a 27.5% increase versus last year. Underlying terms, it's a slight improvement, 225 million underlying net profit compared to 223 in the previous year. And we are guiding the market with regard to expected net profit for the next financial year in the range of 250 million to 270 million euros. But just a term clarification, we will no longer use underlying net profit because no more adjustments are expected in the future. Some of the issues why we were reporting underlying profit are essentially going away from an accounting perspective. Well, Wizz Air remains the leading low-cost carrier in Central and Eastern Europe. If you just look at the growth metrics in the financial year we are reporting, as said, passenger traffic is up to 24 million, close to 24 million passengers. That represents 19% growth. We operated a fleet of 79 AC-20s and AC-21s at the end of the financial year. We were adding 12 aircraft during the course of that year. Our airport portfolio was expanding to 138 airports, 23 more than a year before, and as already commented, our country network has also expanded to 42 countries, four more than before. We opened four more operating bases at the end of the financial year. We were operating 26 operating bases across Central and Eastern Europe, and we employed over 3,000 people. If you look at the performance metrics of the airline, obviously quite significant capacity growth, 16.5% more seats we were bringing to the market. We operated a total of 142,000 flights. We maintained high utilization of the fleet, 12.5 hours. We upped the load factor performance of the airline by almost 2 percentage points to over 90%. Flight regularity was strong. We actually operated 99.8% of the scheduled flights. We cancelled 240 flights, pretty much resulting from severe weather conditions and ATC issues around the winter period. Punctuality suffered to some extent as a result of these matters, and we ended up with 78% of the flights departing on time. And with these headline remarks, let me turn it over to Jan, and then I will take it back after that.
Thank you, Joseph. Notwithstanding very challenging conditions last year, characterized, Joseph indicated, the considerable increase in capacity, competitive capacity in the CE, as well as the translation effect of Brexit, Wizz Air delivered some of the highest margins in the industry while delivering 19% passenger growth, and I think we certainly believe that that was a pretty respectable performance. Group revenues were up €142 million to €1.571 billion. Reported net profit was up €53.1 million to €246 million, a profit margin of 15.7%. Underlying net profit was up 0.6% to €225.3 million, a net profit margin of 14.3%. One of the other slides I'm going to come on to later is cash generation. Wizz Air remains a highly cash generative business. You'll see that the cash generated from operations in fiscal 17 was €311 million. So we remain highly cash generative, and we will continue to be highly cash generative. On to the revenue line. How did our revenues perform? Essentially, we grew faster. This is really driven by the low fuel prices. Our fuel CASK was down 21.9%. These are very strong conditions for ultra-low-cost carriers to stimulate traffic, drive volumes, increase passenger growth. So with these low fuel prices, we increased load factors. Joseph indicated we increased load factor by 1.9 percentage points. In Q4 alone, we increased load factor by 5.5%. So that investment in loads we will start to see coming through in the current financial year and certainly the years ahead. So that was an investment very well made. In terms of larger aircraft, we're very pleased with the financial performance and the operational performance of the A321. Essentially, it has 28% extra seat counts. 25% of our seat count in fiscal 17 is represented by these larger aircraft. We talk about the cost-saving benefit of that aircraft. It's around about 10% versus the smaller A320. With 25% of our fleet now A321s, you can see that structurally embedded in our cost base is a 2.5% improvement. In terms of flight, we fly further. So our stage length has increased by 2.8%. And one thing I wanted to flag in terms of the RASC, this time last year we were guiding our RASC for the full year, fiscal 17, to be down mid-single digits. What did we know then? We knew that we had no Easter. That was 1.9% of the RASC decline. We knew that we were adding the A321s. That has essentially a 1.6% benefit or negative effect because you lose around about 8% of the yield with a larger aircraft, filling the larger aircraft. GBP weakness, a lot of focus has been on Brexit, but the currency weakened significantly in the run-up to Brexit. So whilst we saw 3.2 decline on RASC because of the GBP, half of that was already pre-Brexit. So we knew the Easter effect, we knew the A321 effect, we knew the sterling weakness effect. That all added up to about 5%. That was the guidance that we gave of down mid-single digits. What changed? Brexit. That's another 1.5%. And in terms of the capacity, you'll see the winter capacity in fiscal 17 was significant. So that added another 2%. So that's how we got to the end of year RASC. So when we put forward the guidance, it's heavily driven by numbers and science and data that we drive. The other key message on the slide is our ancillary revenue. It continues to be a very important pillar of our business model. It increased to 41.7%. Now, part of that was the fact that base fares are lower, so we drive our fares lower to stimulate traffic, but also we were able to increase our ancillary revenue per passenger. As indicated, importantly, in terms of driving that, there are two key pieces to getting your low base fares. One is the low cost, and the second is the ancillary piece. A bit of a mixed performance. We continue to see a drag on our bag revenues. Essentially, people don't like paying for bags. We've seen this trend continue for the past couple of years, and that continued. This will be a serious focus for us this year on how we can reverse that trend. So we saw bag revenue per passenger down 1.3, but a considerable improvement on our non-bag, so the value add, essentially what people want to pay for, was up 2.1. So we were able to increase our ancillary revenue per passenger by €0.8 per pax. Still short of a target of €1 per passenger per year, but that's a target we believe we should be continuing to deliver. One thing I would highlight in terms of the fares, you see our average fare is 38.3. We often get compared our fares versus competition, others. One thing that's often missed is the stage length. We essentially fly 28% further than some of our competitors. We fly to Dubai. Katowice, Dubai is 4,800 kilometers. And what we see is that customers do pay for stage length because essentially you're flying further. So our average stage length of 1,582 kilometers is significantly further than European competition. On to the cost base, the second pillar of enabling to get to ultra-low costs. What you can see with the blue bar, you could say it's fairly depressing that we haven't been able to increase our cost base, but the environment that we operate over the past five or six years, there are a number of pressures. I think the notable pressure is the dollar. Just under half our cost base is dollar, fuel, leases. Fiscal 11, fiscal 12, euro dollar was around about 150 to the euro. Last year, in fiscal 16, it was 120. In fiscal 17, it was 110. So you can see considerable inflation coming through on the lease costs and the fuel costs as a result of the dollar. So in order to be able to absorb that, we have a number of opportunities, the A321, improving ownership costs. We're now a listed company, or have been for a couple of years now. Our credit rating, our credit standing in the financial community has improved, so we do see improved costs through all manner of contracts that we operate. And the economies of scale, growing at the pace we grow, delivers those economies of scale. On the inflationary side, infrastructure costs, monopolies, airport monopolies, ground handler monopolies, are specifically the further you go east, you find less and less competition. One thing we saw last year was more pressure from fuel suppliers. So you'll find in some of the airports you only have one fuel supplier. So there's inflationary pressure coming through the airports, there's inflationary pressure coming through those monopoly positions. Brexit effect on GBP, this is the flip side. GBP has been strengthening, so with 28% of our capacity touching down in the UK, you may see a little bit of pressure coming if the GBP does in fact strengthen. How do we break down that cost on a line item? I'd highlight three items. Fuel, clearly what you can see is that the majority of our cost improvements come through fuel, and that's why we've grown faster, so 25 euro cents improvement on the fuel line. With an overall total CASK of 27. So essentially we've been managing the rest of our cost base very, very disciplined. The item I would highlight in terms of the inflationary pressures, the maintenance and the depreciation, we are undergoing a fairly intense program of redelivering, or getting our business ready for redelivering some old aircraft, our old A320s. Those aircraft need to get put into certain conditions, and as a result, you'll start seeing some inflation coming through on the maintenance line. This is an 18-month program, essentially set at getting the business up to getting those aircraft back into condition. So what you saw in fiscal 17, that depreciation essentially doubles. It sounds like a significant number. On an ASK, it increased 67%, but as we go into fiscal 18, that will start to moderate, so you'll see something like half that, and as you go into fiscal 19, it'll moderate to essentially flat. So there is an 18-month blip on the depreciation and the maintenance as we get those aircraft back in condition and redelivered back to the lessors. And the flip side is they're going to be replaced with brand new A321s, and from January 19, brand new A321neos, which I'll come on to later. The other piece of the increase is the aircraft rentals. All our aircraft rentals are in dollar. In fiscal 16, our dollar rate was 120. Last year it was 110. So the inflation coming through is purely dollar related. So we procured very good terms on those aircraft. They're delivering very well on all cost measures, but essentially the dollar has been the main impact on that. We are and continue to be very excited about the A321. The average seat count we now have is 190 seats as of the end of March. It will be 194 at the end of March 2018, and the following year we'll go over the 200 seats. This provides us with tremendous competitive advantage, and you'll start to see the NEOs flowing through that. How does that flow through the cost base? The A320, the 180-seater versus the A321, 230-seater, gives a 10% cost advantage. And as you go from the A321 230-seater to the A321neo 239-seater, you'll see another 10% cost saving. So essentially, the difference between an A320ceo and an A321neo is a 20% cost saving, which is a significant competitive power that we have. Strong cash generation, as I indicated. At the headline number, we've increased our free cash from 646 to 774, an increase of 128 million on profits of 225. But the operations have been generating 311 million. If you remove the balance sheet items, so improved working capital, improved unflown revenue, that's around about 73. So cash really from operations is around about 238 million, which essentially follows profits. So what we're trying to say is that cash follows profit. The negative interest rate environment in Europe, minus 50 basis points, is how much banks currently charge hardworking companies for that to look after their cash. We want to make sure that we put that cash to use and don't have any of the negative carry. So we've been investing significant amounts of the cash, which some of it we can remove if required. 35 million went into aircraft parts, 26 million we bought some spare engines. In terms of self-financing the aircraft, we have to self-finance the deposits on our Airbus aircraft. We currently have $250 million on deposit with the Bank of Toulouse. So that increased 28 million. And also we have a letter of credit facility with leases. There tends to be a 1 or 2 month lease guarantee. So you can either have that secured or unsecured. We secure it, that saves us the cost. But we have over 150 million euros of cash as collateral, which we could in a sense make unsecured at some point. So the business is highly cash generative and will continue to be highly cash generative. How that flows through in terms of the balance sheet, the one item I would flag is leverage. There's a suggestion by the numbers that we've increased our debt. All this is the translation effect of dollar. So when you're a fully leased organization, debt is recognized as capitalizing your leases. Our leases are in dollar. So with the dollar strengthening from 120 to 110, that's essentially changing the maths. But other than that, the company has not taken on any additional debt. With that, I'll pass over to Joseph.
All right. So when you put our business in context in Central and Eastern Europe, what you are seeing is actually GDP growth in the region is accelerating. It is expected to be around 3.5-4%, depending on the country. Now forecast is suggesting 2.5-6.5% GDP growth in Central and Eastern Europe. This is stronger than what it was predicted previously. Central and Eastern Europe still remains underpenetrated, especially compared to Western Europe. Only 10% of the seats of Europe is actually allocated to Central and Eastern Europe, 90% to Western Europe. Propensity to air travel is still lagging behind significantly, despite the fact that over the past 10 years, actually it has improved fivefold in Central and Eastern Europe. But you can see that only 0.4 person is flying within a year in Central and Eastern Europe compared to 1.8 flights per person in Western Europe. Legacy carriers remain weak. Most of them have been bailed out. I mean, if you look at Lotte Polish Airlines, they just took $400 million of bailout, and they managed to waste all of that money on growing their business by 20% last year. And we're seeing that we are very well positioned for taking advantage of airline weaknesses in the region and potential failures in the in Central and Eastern Europe. We have the right business model for the market. In a commoditizing business, ultra low cost is the winning formula. We have an efficient fleet and we have a strong balance sheet, and as a result we are already number one in Central and Eastern Europe, and I think we are well positioned to take a further market positions going forward. This is an interesting chart to show what is really going on in Central and Eastern Europe, and I think you can kind of put our decision in context when we said earlier this year that we are accelerating our own growth. So you look at fiscal 17 and you see a huge capacity influx coming into Central and Eastern Europe. 23 million new seats were put into the region compared to 10 million a year before. At the same time, we are also seeing that capacity growth is becoming more moderate, it's slowing down in the current financial year. We may not see every seat because some airlines have not published their winter schedule fully, but I think it's going to be probably around 15 million seats in total coming to Central and Eastern Europe as growth capacity in the current financial year. So on the back of the low fuel price environment, I think it just underpins our theory that this industry tends to compete away the input cost benefits in the form of capacity capacity inflation. That's exactly what happened in fiscal 17. Now, as we are seeing a more stable input cost environment, you see more capacity discipline coming back into the marketplace. And we were growing pretty much at the same rate in terms of seats in fiscal 17 as in fiscal 16, but that basically positioned us very unfavorably in terms of gross market share vis-a-vis the market. While we were growing 36% of the total market in fiscal 17, the same seat growth resulted only in 16% last financial year. That's why we decided to enhance our growth program and actually up our capacity deployment. Essentially, we were making that investment at the back end of last financial year, but we're going to take the benefit of that maturity of that investment in the current financial year. And you see that we are really back into game now, and we are about 50% of the total growth in Central and Eastern Europe by adding 6.5 million seats to the market. Also, interestingly, when you look at how our market share has been evolving in Central and Eastern Europe, now every fifth passenger flying in and out of Central and Eastern Europe, Eastern Europe is taking Wizz Air. But it was only every seventh passenger 5 years back in fiscal 13, fiscal 14. Over 90% of the seats of the gross capacity we have put on existing businesses, either in the form of increasing frequencies on existing routes or by joining existing airports, joining the dots. And it's less than 10% of the gross capacity that was deployed to new airports, new countries. So I think it was a very de-risked gross profile during the period, similar to what we saw in previous times. Also interestingly, now Central and Eastern Europe is constituting 14% of the gross capacity of the airline. Western Europe is still Central and Eastern Europe to Western Europe is still the dominating flow. 85% of the growth is happening there. But intra-Central and Eastern Europe is a new phenomenon with this 14% growth. As mentioned, we opened four new bases during the year in Moldova, in Georgia, and Romania, and we are about to open two new bases, well, one here in London, London Luton base, and the other in Bulgaria. We made those announcements already in the previous financial year. Our network development has been very balanced, as you can see. We have been preferring secondary airports, regional airports in the network development. We opened up 26 new destination airports during the year. We added some, I think, very interesting airports like St. Petersburg, like Astana, Kazakhstan, or Eilat in Israel, and we continue to build a franchise in Central and Eastern Europe and also in Western Europe. A total of 117 routes were added to the network in that period. So this is how our fleet allocation is done. By the end of 2017, we will be operating a fleet of 87 aircraft. You can see Poland and Romania being our largest markets, but also significant fleet stationed in Hungary, Bulgaria, and some other countries. It is very balanced. I mean, 87 aircraft allocated across 28 operating bases gives a hell of a balance and a very strong portfolio. Ancillary revenues remain in focus for the business. We were building the ancillary revenue franchise by achieving 27.5 euros per passenger on ancillary revenues. We keep driving a number of initiatives. The Wizz Discount Club, for example, keeps gaining traction. We build the franchise to over a million members. The fare selection we introduced earlier with the Wizz Go is gaining traction as well. Seed selection is still an initiative to be matured. We are getting more and more out of it, but we think it has further potential. So ancillary revenues remain in strong focus of the company. As we have been referring to before, really where we are hit on ancillary revenues is the bag-related charges, but we've been able to compensate those weaknesses and actually adding to the franchise by maturing new initiatives and increasing the penetration of existing initiatives. Just a few words on the technological advancements in the company. As it is today, Wizz Air is the eighth most visited airline website in the world. I mean, this goes much beyond the actual size of the franchise of Wizz Air. We are getting 56% of our visitors on the app and 44% on large screens. I mean, this is probably the most what an airline gets today. The web is available in 24 languages. We are getting 900 million page views, while the app is available in 11 languages, getting half a billion page views. So very significant, and they continue to be the driving force for the distribution system of the airline. We are not in GDSs, and we have no plans to get into GDSs. We also came up with a three-click booking model that in 30 seconds you can get your booking done in with three clicks. That is gaining traction as well. Obviously, it is very popular with frequent travelers of the airline. With regard to guidance, for fiscal 18, we are expecting capacity to grow 23%, pretty much on an equalized basis, same growth rate in H1 as in H2, stage lengths to increase modestly, 1 or 2%, we continue to build load factor, we are planning on an additional percentage point load factor, but we are expecting CASK fuel costs to increase, but this is always subject to the market. So for modeling purposes, we are using the $515 per metric ton. Ex-fuel cost, we are expecting it to be broadly flat. I think we have two factors affecting the ex-fuel cost performance of the airline. On the positive side, we have the AC-21 rollout. Obviously, the AC-21, as Ian already explained, gives us a seat production 10% lower cost than the AC-20, and the more AC-21 fly, obviously, the more 10% we are getting through the system. It is countered by some maintenance accounting matters. We will start redelivering quite a number of aircraft in the next few years. As a result, according to our maintenance policy, once we are approaching the redelivery period, more maintenance events are happening, and as a result, those events inflate the maintenance cost base. Well, some of it is paper, some of it is real, but this is kind of a short-term peak. In kind of 18 months, it will tail off, and we will see a clearer benefit of the AC-21 program, and by that time, we will also see the new deliveries and the benefits coming through the new deliveries. We are expecting revenue per ASK, RASK, to be flat, broadly speaking, but on top, we are getting the Easter benefit at the front end of the year and the Easter benefit at the back end of the year. Please remember that we did not have any Easter in fiscal 17, but we are benefiting from essentially two Easters in fiscal 18. But putting Easter aside, it is a stable environment in terms of yield on the back of a stable fuel environment and a more stable, stabilizing capacity environment. Effective tax rate similar to our previous years, we are guiding on 6%, and all in, this results in 250 to 270 million net profit for the financial year. Thank you.
So now we'll move over to questions.
Hi, it's Chris Conway from J.P. Morgan. In the release today, you commented that you didn't see any apparent shift in demand out of the U.K. Perhaps, could you comment that you saw any shift in the mix between JFR, leisure, and business? And my second question is, with respect to the network development, you've got about two-thirds of growth coming from existing points on the route map. Can you comment on what the churn rate looked like this past year and what you'd expect for FY18? And then lastly, what's your latest assessment of the long-term attraction of the Ukrainian market in light of your former much larger presence there? Thank you.
Okay. Well, the churn rate is around 4 to 5% of the routes. It has come down. 3-5 years ago, we were tracking around 10%. So clearly, we are getting the new routes better than before. But I think it is healthy to have a churn rate all the times, and it is around 4 to 5% at this point in time. With regard to Ukraine, you know, if there is an airline that that must love that country, that scored Wizz Air, you know, we had even a local AOC, we had a local airline called Wizz Air Ukraine, and we were operating that airline for about 5 years, 5 to 6 years, due to severe issues in the country, especially on exchange control. We had to seize that operation. But now we are back in the game, not through the Ukrainian entity, but through Wizz Air Hungary, the EU entity, and we have a base in Kiev, and actually we are expanding capacity in Kiev, and we are also expanding now in Lviv. So yes, I think we are very committed to the Ukrainian market. Nevertheless, we just need to take into account that market is still regulated and somewhat constrained in terms of market access, and that sort of gives a level of boundary to the expansion. But we are certainly there, and we are expanding in Ukraine. So I think in the coming years, assuming that nothing is going to rock the boat again in the country, you should be expecting us to do more, significantly more in Ukraine. And your first question was regarding yes. So I think we remain quite positive and quite upbeat with regard to the prospect of the UK business. Last year we were adding 1 million seats to the UK network. This year we are adding another 1 million seats to the UK network. We are growing at a rate of 13% as we speak. And we are seeing obviously strong market performance, otherwise we would not be growing this business. We are not seeing any dent to underlying demand in the market. We are seeing a slight mix change. We are certainly seeing significantly more inbound tourism coming into the UK as a result of the weak pound, and somewhat less outbound tourism originating from the UK as a result of the weak pound. Other than that, I think the business is stable. So we have around half of the franchise coming to the UK on leisure and business, and the other half is visiting friends and relatives, roughly speaking. It may change route by route, but that's the overall picture.
Good morning, Mark Fortescue from Panmure. Just one question, please, on the capacity environment slide. I think 14 in our pack, it might have been 16 on the projector. You're seeing capacity growth in 18 about third of the level it was in 17, if my numbers are right. That looks a bit lower than what I'm seeing in the flight schedules last time I checked. Can you just give the main sort of differences in those growth rates, maybe by key regions or by low-cost competitors versus flag carriers?
You mean Central Eastern European?
The tailing back of growth of competitor capacity.
Yeah, so, what we are seeing is that last year every airline was growing, including the legacy carriers, and this is the result of the low fuel price. And as we were guiding previously, a low input cost feeds through into the fare environment through capacity dilution, essentially, and that's exactly what happened. What we are seeing now is that legacy carriers are holding the lines, so legacy carriers are no longer growing, certainly not at rate as before. But low-cost carriers, including Ryanair, EasyJet, ourselves, continue to grow the business in Central Eastern Europe. Just because of the lack of growth from the legacy carriers, you are seeing this change in growth capacity.
I mean, just to add to that, I think we were talking about the capacity that we expected to come on was going to be significant. When you looked at the order books of a lot of our competition, the question was, where are these aircraft going to come? The reality is that there's a lot of airlines out there that just aren't flying. The utilization is incredibly low. So what you see as the fuel price goes down to $30 a barrel, that between fiscal 16 and fiscal 17, suddenly these airlines, these less efficient, fuel-efficient airlines, are adding a couple of extra block hours per day on their utilization. So what you see in fiscal 17 is these airlines, I would say, trying to max out their fleet. That's more like a one-time blip. So what you see going into fiscal 18 is the ultra-low-cost carriers that are adding that capacity. I think to your specific question in terms of the number, this is what we see on schedule. So 13.4 for the year, you know, it's probably going to be a bit higher. But I think, you know, rather than looking at the sort of the numbers, ultimately what we're saying is that between fiscal 16 and fiscal 17, it more than doubles. I mean, that's significant growth in capacity. And we're seeing that dropping down by just over half as you go into fiscal 18. And who are the ones that are driving that growth? It's the ultra-low-cost carriers. And the other proportion there is that when you're contributing 16% to the capacity, you're more of a price taker. When you're adding 50% of the capacity, we're always going to be price takers, but there's a little bit more control in the fare environment.
Damien Burrow from RBC. Three questions and apologies for three. First of all, on lease costs, could you tell us a little bit more about what you're seeing in terms of the financing cost of those leases? Is that starting to come down as new capital is beginning to come into that market? And are you beginning to see that in what you're seeing in new leases? Secondly, you alluded to it in the presentation on the EX261. You don't seem to cancel many flights at all if it was only 241. Given the cost of the EU261, how are you going to, or will you start thinking about the balance of that differently? For example, if you've got a first departure that is delayed, do you delay that and all the subsequent flights and end up paying EU261, or do you increase the degree of cancellations to offset the EU261? How do you think about that dynamic? Mm-hmm. And then very finally, sorry, an accounting question, but could you talk a little bit more why you end up with these high depreciation and sort of maintenance costs on the exit of the aircraft as they come off lease, and what do we need to think about in future in terms of what you have provided during the duration of the lease and what doesn't get provided as other aircraft come off in future?
In terms of lease costs, I think that's something that we've been highlighting. So we were seeing improved lease costs, the embedded financing charge on the lease costs. I think we talked about pre-IPO as something to the tune of about 6%. Post-IPO, you're looking more closer to the 4%. That's the combination, I think, of the improved credit standing of the company, the transparency, the perceived transparency and the governance of the company. But also, I think we've also alluded to that in certain parts of the world, predominantly Asia, that the leasing market has been particularly hot. So the financing charges have been coming down, and also the interest rates in the globally have been fairly low. So we've continued to see that. So I think in terms of the lease rates, we get more and more competitive rates. So that's definitely coming through. Now, I think looking forward, when we start taking the NEOs, clearly when you do, we enter into leases, there's a middleman. So that's when the on-balance sheet financing question really starts to get quite exciting. So that's something more for the future. E261 is a disproportionate charge on airlines. If you look at the numbers, we spent 12.3 million euros last year. That was double the previous year in connection with delay and cancellations. We cancelled 214 flights last year, 214 flights on 142,000 flights. So to pay 12.3 million when you've only cancelled 200 flights, I think is fairly disproportionate. In terms of the policy, what that does lend towards is that the philosophy we've always had is we want to get our passengers to their destination as fast as possible on time. So when there is an ATC strike, or whether there is weather, if there is a weather disruption that causes a delay, we've had a tendency to essentially delay those flights throughout the day. What that means is that compensation can't be claimed on the first flight because there's a valid reason, but any consequential one you can claim. So it's essentially that back end. So that does encourage airlines to cancel more flights, and that's something that we have been seriously looking at. And you know, when you're spending 12 million, which is 5% of your profit on things like that, it certainly encourages us to cancel more flights. But when I say cancel more flights, you're talking more like 250 cancellations rather than 214 cancellations. So it's not going to be something that's going to be particularly significant. And in terms of the higher depreciation, I think the challenge we have is that we're, when you compare us to competition or other airlines, is that we have 100% operating lease financing model. That was the right model to have when you have old technology, when you're a small company, when you're a fast-growing company. On-balance sheet financing has other benefits that we don't enjoy just yet. With the operating lease, those aircraft go back to lessors, which means you have to get those aircraft back into condition. So during the, let's say, a 10-year lease, you're accumulating a maintenance reserves, and those reserves are then essentially spent when you have a heavy maintenance event, an engine refurbishment, for example. So there's the maintenance piece. There's also the depreciation piece. In terms of the policy, there's essentially three ways you can do it. You can either front load the costs, or you can fully backload the costs, which is tends to be a U.S. practice, or there's something in the middle. And essentially, what we've adopted is the, I would say, the middle ground in terms of that. So what that means over the next 18 months, we've got quite a few aircraft getting ready to be returned to lessors. And again, the excitement is that we've got brand new A321s coming through in the A321neos. But there is a cost associated with that. So essentially what that means is that these aircraft are going to be grounded for a couple of weeks, and you'll have to get those aircraft back into condition to give back to lessors. Interesting enough, the question is where those aircraft go on to. And it's quite funny to see that those aircraft are ending in legacy carrier fleets. Hopefully that answers your question on the lease question.
Thank you. It's Jared Clark from UBS. You've given full year guidance in terms of RASK, I guess. Can you give a little bit of terms of colour on what you're seeing in the current quarter and maybe early indications for the summer quarter in terms of fares? Secondly, just in terms of bases, you've obviously opened up four. Can you give a bit of colour as well, just in terms of considerations for opening up new bases? I was going to ask a third, but actually I want to link it to the last question. Just in terms of fleets, you continue to kind of take market share. Do you think of ramping up your fleet deliveries in terms of extending lease lives, or possibly going out there and seeing if you can buy some further fleet? Thanks.
Maybe I would start with the quarter. So we don't give quarterly guidance on RASK or cost, but I think what I can say is that, certainly we have the Easter benefit in Q1, and that's behind us, and we are seeing quite a stable yield environment for the remainder of the first half, actually, not only Q1, but also Q2. As far as we are seeing that period based on our forward bookings. With regard to H2, I mean, obviously we have no visibility on that period yet. So, but I think it is a slightly better picture than what we were expecting before. And again, I think this is on the back of more capacity discipline on the supply side and stronger demand arising from the higher than expected growth of GDP, especially in Central and Eastern Europe. With regard to the basis, we have one single principle. What we really apply is that every base has to deliver profit. We have 14 base countries, not just 13, because London is not yet open. But we are expecting profit. Actually, we are delivering profit. In each of our base countries, and the same goes for the base. Obviously, there is a maturity period. You need to allow a year or two or three, depending on the context of the business, to mature and to become profitable. But the base and the country, they all have to deliver profit to the business. So we don't subsidize. So we don't do we have a few strong calls in the network to subsidize some of the weaknesses. So we haven't found a better strategy than profitability. So there is nothing strategic for us other than profitable.
You want to take this one?
In terms of the increasing fleet capacity, I think it sort of goes back to the question in terms of where do you grow. We now have 28 bases. Last year we added 12 aircraft, so that suggests that essentially every base will get a new aircraft every second year. So as you see the market growing, that certainly does encourage you to grow faster, and you're seeing that. So we originally guided a couple of years ago 15% growth, and we felt that was the right level of growth to maintain flat margins at around about 15%. But the market is growing across the network, and so therefore that does encourage growth, and that's sort of why you're seeing the step up from 15 to 16, 17 to 18, 19, and the 23% going into this year. In terms of the fleet delivery schedule, I mean, that will need to be reviewed, always constantly being reviewed. There are options available to us, lease extensions. There are leases out there that are available. There are other ways of getting aircraft. So certainly that's something we're fully on top of. And so our fleet plan will be fully delivered, whether committed or not, as we look forward.
Hi, it's Andrew Lobbenberg from HSBC. Can I ask just for an update on the CFO appointment situation? Can I ask whether you see opportunities in the context of what's happening in Italy, I guess particularly with an eye to the Romanian market, but in general, whether you see opportunities there and whether you can move swiftly if needed? And then finally, can I come to the issue of the regulatory situation in the UK? Do you have concerns about how to handle your EU ownership structure and what to do with UK investors? And to what extent are you advancing issues of setting up a UK AOC in the event that that's necessary to defend your traffic rights from the UK to points outside Hungary? And is that, you know, is the Luton base meant to be a first move on that anyway?
Okay, well, with regard to the CFO, I think the CFO position has become a great cost-saving opportunity for the company. I've been running this business without a CFO for almost a year now, and I'm not getting double paid for that, I can tell you, so we are saving a lot of money on it. And apparently, it's not affecting the performance of the business, so you wonder why the hell we need a CFO. But being more serious, I think it's just showing the strength of the organization that, you know, this business survives. These CFO gaps actually twice, people underneath are very strong to actually deliver the business and cope with the challenges. So this is not my credit, this is really the credit of people like Ian and his colleagues one level below the CFO. But we just want to do a good job, to be honest, on the CFO. I mean, after sort of Sonia leaving us for personal reasons, I mean, we just want to be very careful to make the right decisions, not only from a business perspective, but also taking into account the social aspects of the job and the individual. So that's it. So it just takes us more time, but we are in the search, and hopefully sooner or later we're going to be able to announce the new CFO. With regard to Italy, I mean, of course, everyone is looking at Italy, given the weakness of Alitalia. We have very limited overlap with Alitalia itself, so kind of that immediate business opportunity is fairly limited. But Italy has become a very strong market for Wizz Air. Actually, after the UK, Italy is the second largest destination market in our network. So we have been already growing a lot to Italy. I mean, well above 20% growth for a number of years. So significantly ahead of the corporate growth rate there. And we will continue to do that for so long as we are seeing demand for our services. But again, the capacity overlap with Alitalia is fairly limited. With regard to the UK regulatory environment, but first of all, the UK is still a member of the European Union, and the same rules of regulations apply as before. And I don't think the terms of Brexit have been defined yet. So I don't know what the new regulatory environment will be in the UK. But obviously, you have two sorts of issues. You can imagine one is market access, and the other is around ownership and control. With regard to market access, we're going to be putting the necessary contingencies in place just to be on the safe side. So yes, indeed, we are looking at an air operator certificate in the United Kingdom. We haven't decided yet, but this is being looked at. We may or may not need it. I mean, we are seeing non-EU countries that are actually quite nicely cooperating with the European Union, like Switzerland, for example. But you know, you can go to countries like Israel, which is lined up with the European system. So we don't really know whether we need a UK air operator certificate, but we are certainly entertaining that that option. With regard to ownership and control, again, I don't think we fully understand or anyone fully understands what we would be required to comply with post-Brexit. Obviously, we are looking at the issue, but we are not taking actions at this point in time.
Oliver Sleet from Barclays. Just one, please, on the A321neo. I know there have been some problems with the Pratt engine at Airbus recently. I just wondered, is there any potential delay on your schedule of deliveries, or could you switch over to CEOs if necessary, or are you comfortable those issues will get resolved in time for your deliveries?
Well, first of all, the NEO deliveries will start in 2019, so we have almost 2 years before that. The way I would put it is that, well, of course, we are fully on top of the situation, so we are in constant dialogue with Airbus as well as Pratt & Whitney itself. I think the issues are twofold. One is around engineering and one is around industrial ramp-up. With regard to engineering, I think it is fairly common that when you bring a disruptive technology to the market, you go through the childhood diseases. I mean, you can see what happened to the Dreamliner, you know, the composite materials, the battery issues and all those sort of things. I think that's exactly what's happening to this engine. This is a disruptive technology with a hell of a potential, much greater potential than the alternative engine displays. That engine is more of a refinement of an existing technology. The GTF is a brand new technology what they bring to the market. But my understanding is that actually all those engineering issues are now identified and being addressed. Very significant resources are mobilized to do that. And I think the whole industry, including Pratt & Whitney, but probably more importantly Airbus, as well, are very confident that this is going to get done in a fairly short space of time. And then you move to the next issue, industrial ramp-up, to what extent Pratt & Whitney is going to be able to ramp up their production sufficiently to deal with the backlogs and you know, previous issues what they've got. I don't know, but what I know is that Pratt & Whitney has been hiring 6,000 people just over the past few months. They have been bringing back a number of executives from retirement who've seen real business and seen issues like this. So they are investing hugely into this project, and I think that investment must bear fruit sooner or later. So I'm personally hopeful that within the space of 2 years this is going to get fixed and all these issues will be behind us by that time. If not, we will obviously look at contingencies, but we've got no indications so far that we should be rescheduling or we should be replacing aircraft as a result of the GTF issues.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. There will be a brief pause while questions are being registered. And that was 01 to ask a question. And our first question comes from Mark Simpson from Goodbody. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, morning guys. Just a couple of questions. Just want to have a kind of focus on the Wizz Tours. You highlight, I think, 18.1 million euros of turnover, a slight loss, 800,000. I'm just wondering if you can give us an idea of the momentum behind that business and at what point do you think it will start contributing. The other thing, I suppose, if just to reconcile, if you have the operating airline revenue line that you give and then total revenue line, there's sort of a differential of circa 9.2 million. I'm just wondering, is that representing the hotel portion of Wizz Tours? So just to get a clearer picture of how the tours revenue splits out between passenger and hotels. And then just finally, you've talked about legacy carriers. I just wonder if you could give us a comment about what you think Blue Air is doing. I mean, they're growing their capacity at 70-plus percent this summer. They've obviously taken delivery of a whole range of pretty ancient 737s, and I think their average age fleet is 21-plus years. I mean, is that sustainable? Do you think it's just a short-term kind of push to try to grab share, but at the end of the day, the aging fleet's going to mitigate against them actually being able to go further than their current plans.
Okay, maybe I would deal with Wisthours and Brewer and Ian will handle the other question. But with regard to Wisthours, I mean, as you can see, and this is still a very small piece of the total business for the group, 18 million euros of revenue compared to almost 1.6 billion of the total revenue. So this is fairly marginal. And you know, given that this is a virtual platform, you know, this business just simply cannot lose much money as a result, because we hardly employ any infrastructure or any labor to support this business. So we are very safe from that perspective, you know, we continue to believe in the prospect of that business. But obviously, at the same time, we will review the performance of the business. The key issue for Wisthours is to gain scale in order to be able to contract bets directly as opposed to going through integrators, and I think that's going to change the profitability of that business fundamentally. We should be getting there in the next 2 years or so. So I think that's really when you should be seeing a measurable improvement in their contribution and performance. So the priority short term is to keep building scale. And priority after that will be more around profitability. But with regard to Blue Air, I mean, if you don't understand what they are doing, I don't think we much better understand it either. But my guess is that, I mean, certainly 70% growth is not sustainable. It cannot be profitable. And given that it is not building on a market strength, that capacity is quite spread all over the place. We believe that the airline is just trying to position itself for either sale of the company or a capital transaction for the company, but clearly what they are doing is not sustainable, and you know, we don't think that that business has the necessary strength to be a long-term player in the marketplace.
Mark, I think back to Wisthours. So I think you're referring to the numbers on page 9. What exactly is that 8.9 million? Essentially, what Wisthours is a tour operator. It packages airline tickets and hotels and other things such as car hire. What you see is that they buy tickets from Wizz Air. So within the airline numbers, Wisthours is a customer. So it would be inappropriate to have ancillary revenues and passenger tickets going through the ancillary line in the airline and double count it in Wisthours. So hence the consolidation adjustment is just stripping out the ancillaries that's being recognized by the airline that sold on to Wisthours.
Great. Okay, thanks for that.
Thank you. And as there are no further questions registered, I will hand back the call to the speakers.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your questions.